This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Here is a picture which takes you behind the doctor's office, detailing in clear, unwavering terms a subject matter unable to be shown in films up to now. In this old production, you will see the latest hygienic discoveries demonstrated and explained. Among them, the results of using hormone creams for bust development purposes and other breast development methods. A picture that dares to throw back the veil of secrecy which surrounds all too many marriages, those in which careless wives and husbands jeopardize their marriages because of ignorance. The art of love must be learned. This can only be done through intelligent study of both anatomical and psychological aspects of love and marriage. This has been successfully accomplished in this unique film presentation. Remember the title, Mated.
Now there's a time-tested way to sell movie tickets. Promise to break a taboo for educational and edifying reasons, of course. We just heard one of the many come-ons used by the creators of the adults-only cinema of earlier decades. Of course, lots of adults-only movies didn't bother with the educational pretense. They just promised throbbing dramas of desire, sex, sin, and exotic thrills. My guest Eddie Muller has co-authored a new book called Grindhouse, The Forbidden World of Adults-Only Cinema. It's a history of the movie industry that thrived in the seedy parts of town, shamelessly exploiting people's fears and desires. Before we talk about the history of the grindhouse, let's hear what the word actually means.
Grindhouse is a theater that has no starting times. They just grind the movies all day long. The show kind of begins when the customer arrives. No intermissions.
And why is it done that way?
It's not really necessary in a lot of these theaters that are showing adults-only movies to have starting times, because typically people like to enter when it's dark in the theater anyway. So you don't see them queuing up outside too often at a grindhouse. So that's it. It maximizes the run of a film, too. They just show all day long, no stopping.
All the films you write about are adults-only films. What separates these adults-only films from the rest of the movies in the theaters?
They all violated the Hays Code, which was a production code self-administered by the Hollywood studios. And they created a list of do's and don'ts, what was allowed and not allowed in Hollywood movies. And basically, Will Hays' list became the shooting script for all these adults-only films.
What were some of the taboos stipulated by the production code that the adults-only movies were happy to show?
Oh, well, it went from everything, just general moral tone was one thing, but then obviously nakedness was totally forbidden, but prolonged kissing scenes were forbidden, any kind of improper contact between men and women was improper, drunkenness was not to be shown, of course, crime could not pay, crime had to be punished in the movies. And all of this stuff went on in the adults-only movies. One of the distinctions, however, in the 1930s of the adults-only films was that they had this moral cloak that they wrapped their plots in to sort of say, we're really doing this for the edification of the public. These are the pitfalls that, the men that were going to see these, they were instructional lessons in how to keep your daughter from falling into a life of prostitution. And of course, the square up, as they called it, which came at the end of the film or the beginning of the film, put the moral stamp on it, saying this is all for the betterment of our society.
A lot of our listeners might be familiar with the film Reefer Madness, a film that marketed itself as a cautionary tale about the problems of youth and drugs, or, problems of smoking marijuana. But it also showed a lot of people getting high, and that's really what brought people into the theaters.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, the person who made that movie made a lot of other adults-only films in that era, a lot of exploitation films in
right.
that era. What were some of the other films?
Well, that's Duane Esper that you're referring to. And Esper actually didn't make Reefer Madness. He bought the film for distribution.
So he marketed it.
Exactly, yeah. It was made by a church group in Southern California as a cautionary tale, just as you say. And Esper, who was a real showman, they called him King of the Road Shows, figured out that he could cut in the hot parts to Reefer Madness and show it on the grindhouse circuit, cut them out, and still show it to school groups and church groups and things, so he would make money coming and going.
How are these films marketed and advertised?
Well, the people who made these films, and most of them were part of this cadre of exploitation road showmen called the 40 Thieves. And the 40 Thieves were spread all around the country, and they were all the men who would do what the Hollywood studios refused to do. But being a road showman, their backgrounds, by and large, were in the carnival. And they knew how to set up a show quick, get in, strike while the iron's hot, get out before the cops show up. That was how they did their business. But the shows they actually put on at the theaters were pretty extraordinary, because they would have live appearances in the lobby by, you know, they had this corpse that they would tote around with them and sell back and forth to each other, who was this old Wild West bandit named Elmer McCurdy. And they would have, very often they would have freaks. Esper, Dwayne Esper, bought the rights to Todd Browning's Freaks at one point, which was not really an adults-only movie, and he called it Nature's Mistakes, and did sell it as kind of some kind of promise of some weird sex thing in the film. And he ended up taking a whole group of freaks with him on the road to appear in the theater lobbies along with the screening of the film.
So, in other words, in the lobby, there'd be almost like a carny freak show.
Absolutely.
To get people into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And like in a carnival, the marketing and ad campaign would promise what? Promise?
Sights you've never seen before. That's the whole thing. The adults-only business stems directly from the carnival. It's the tent show at the end of the Midway, where you have to be a little bit older to go down there. There's the barker out front. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Behind this curtain, you will see sights never before witnessed by any man. And that was the come-on. And it still is the come-on. And it's infallible. It never fails to make money.
So there seemed to be two different angles to get people into the theaters. One was the, you're going to see freaks and sex and like you've never seen before. And then the other come-on was, this edifying and educational film will teach you about the dangers of drugs or the dangers of unprotected sexuality.
Exactly.
So they get you from either end, the cautionary tale or the freak show explicit come
right
on.
And sometimes the two intersected perfectly, and that's when you had the sex hygiene movie.
What was the sex hygiene movie?
Well, these are the pitfalls of having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I'll tell you, the collision of concepts in those movies is pretty astounding to witness. Invariably, these were movies about men of a good social station who succumb to temptation, usually on the eve of their marriage to some decent woman. You know, it's always the bachelor party, that stray cat at the bachelor party that this guy falls for. And the film then proceeds, once he has contracted this disease, the film will get into clinical examples of venereal disease. That was the big attraction. So the producers of these films would ferret out this old medical footage from a lot of it from the military, and they would splice this in. And you know, again, it's the freak show thing. So you had your moral sex education movie, and you had your freak show come on in one tight package.
And of course, that would be sexual, too, because you were being shown, what, diseased genitals?
Exactly, yeah. And the first time a lot of people actually saw genitals on the big screen was nauseating. I mean, you know, it was sores and oozing pus and all. It was just absolutely awful.
Now, there's another category of exploitation films, of adults-only films, the jungle movie. What was the come-on of the jungle movie?
Well, the thing that is so astounding about the jungle movie, or Guna Guna pictures, as they were called in the trade, was that you could actually see full nudity because the people were African-American. And the strange thing in this was that state censor boards, this is particularly in the South, had this double standard, because to apply the same standards to the African-American performers, and they were mostly performers, because although these masqueraded as documentaries from the, you know, dark heart of Africa, you know, there were a lot of the hot footage was being shot in the hills outside Burbank with, you know, cocktail waitresses and things. And the censor boards in the South had this double standard that said, if we are concerned about the nudity of the African Americans, then we're putting them on the same social plane as all of the white people that we're worried about in these movies, you know. So if a Caucasian actress, you know, slipped her bra strap in a movie, whoa, this was hot stuff, and can we actually show that? But the African American women were allowed to go around topless in these jungle movies because they were, you know, there's no kind way to put it. I mean, these censors equated them more closely with the animals in the film than with the humans in the films.
My guest is Eddie Muller, co-author of the new book Grindhouse, The Forbidden World of Adults-Only Cinema. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eddie Muller, and we're talking about his new book, Grindhouse, The Forbidden World of Adults-Only Cinema. How did you find some of the early adults-only films that you needed to see in order to write this book?
Some of them on bootleg tape. Some of them are available now on videotape. There are some other cultural archaeologists out there who are actually digging up the films, and they are available. And I have to say that some of them are kind of tough to get through. The nudist camp movies are the most boring movies ever made.
What are the nudist camp movies?
In the early 1950s, there was a picture called The Garden of Eden that a fellow named Walter Bibo made. And this created, it was brought up on obscenity charges in New York State. And a judge there, Charles Desmond, ruled that nudity per se was not obscene. The only problem was is that the nude people couldn't really be doing anything in the movie. So this created nudist camp movies where you could see naked people. You really didn't see full frontal nudity. But, they would be engaged in such amorous activities as picnics and sack races and ping pong and things like this. But there was no contact of any kind allowed between these people. So, believe it or not, people paid good money to go see these nudist camp movies. They just wanted to see people naked. That was it.
And I think Russ Meyer, early in his career, did nudist camp films. Russ Meyer of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls and Faster Pussycat Kill Kill and Vixen and Super Vixen fame.
Mm-hmm. Well, this may be a fine distinction, but Russ Meyer actually created a genre known as the nudie cutie movie, which is distinct now, Terry, from the nudist camp movie.
Excuse me?
It was okay to leer in the nudie cutie movies. You had to keep a straight face when it was a nudist camp movie. But Russ Meyer got in there and said, you know, we know what this is really all about. And so he made a picture called The Immoral Mr. Tease, which was like a cheesecake calendar come to life. And that just created, that really did sort of open the floodgates. And at that time, The Immoral Mr. Tease was the most successful adults-only movie ever made. Just did huge business wherever it played.
And what separated that from the nudist camp movie?
The nudie cutie movie, was funny. One of the mainstays of that genre is that in order to leer at the naked women in the movie, the male character had to be sort of a bumbling dolt. He had to seem harmless and not a threat to these women. So the women in nudie cutie movies are really presented sort of they're like all American goddesses, you know. They're just going about their daily chores and they're just gorgeous and beautiful. And the men are just saps. They're just bumbling dolts like out of some 1950s sitcom or something. And they're always getting into, you know, goofy entanglements, trying to be voyeurs. That's the whole point. But it was all about leering. Nudist camp movies, apparently, they were, but you would never know it from the film itself. So Russ Meyer changed all that. It was definitely about looking.
One of the things you write about in your book, Grindhouse, is how foreign films, foreign sex films started entering American art houses, really changing the whole nature of sexuality in the films, and of it kind of combining the sense of like sophistication with the forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
What's a good example of that?
The first example of that would, well, the biggest example of that would be And God Created Woman, the Roger Vadim film with Bardot.
With Brigitte Bardot.
And with Brigitte Bardot. That was, at that time, when that came out in this country in 1956, that was the most successful foreign film ever to play in the United States.
I remember when I was young, you write a little bit about Brigitte Bardot. And you have a picture of her with like almost like a T-shirt and shorts or something, and she's soaking wet, and so this is what she's wearing is very revealing. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was young, some of the ads with Sophia Loren, they did look like very exotic sexual films. I didn't think of her as like the most sophisticated actress. I thought of her as being these films where I wished I could go see them because they had this promise of really revealing, you know, things that you wouldn't get to see in other movies. Was she a kind of early symbol of the more like sophisticated art house approach to sex films?
Absolutely. Now, there's one particular image, I think the one that you're talking about, the soaking wet image. That's Sophia Loren. And that is from a Hollywood movie, amazingly enough. She had made a lot of movies in Italy where she was this, because the Italians did this earthy thing, you know, in all the neo-realist movies. And Loren came over, and Hollywood, their approach was, I don't know how else to say this, was to make her wet. I mean, they threw water on her in every part that she played to get this revealing thing without actually being revealing. So, and she laughs about it. She used to say, you know, I spent my first 5 years in Hollywood just dripping wet in every movie I make.
The adults-only movies showed the kind of stuff that the Hollywood production code said you weren't allowed to see.
Right.
When the production code ended in the 60s and was replaced by an age-related rating system, how did that affect the grindhouse fare?
Well, it had the funny effect of legitimizing it, because the X became one of the ratings in the Motion Picture Association rating thing. There was the G and initially the M and the R and the X. But for some odd reason, they elected not to copyright the X like they did the other rating classifications, because they didn't want to really be associated. They didn't want to have Hollywood product associated with the adults-only product. So they said, well, we'll say that it's X and it's forbidden and all this, but we'll just leave it to the adults-only producers to kind of deal with it as they see fit. What they didn't realize is that it would have the effect initially of legitimizing adults-only product, because, I mean, the X was the perfect symbol to represent a forbidden movie. It was, again, to go back to the carnival concept, I mean, this was the perfect simple symbol for the ultimate come-on. You know, it's X. You'll see, you know, forbidden things in this movie. And so they splashed the X all over the ads, but it also legitimized these movies because the X was officially part of the motion picture rating system. And then, of course, things got really complicated when Midnight Cowboy, which was an X-rated film, won the Oscar for Best Picture. And this was all a great boon to the adults-only producers.
Having spent all this time watching movies that a lot of people would think of as being utterly depraved, what have you learned about American pop culture?
Well, you know, one of the things that I got out of it from the research is that there is a lot of humor in it when you look at the big picture. And you can kind of see how strange our ideas are about these things. And looking at it in that way, I was able to find a lot of humor in it. And I think that it is like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz or something, kind of pulling back the curtain and exposing this demon behind all these movies as being just this old carny guy who's saying, you know, excuse me, I was just trying to make a buck, you know, I'm sorry. Dave Friedman, who was a big help in making this book, said that I did this long interview with him, and he concluded it by saying, "You know, I have made a really good living exploiting the fear, ignorance, and greed of the American public." And he was a little, he was not in any way ashamed of that, but it was kind of a admission on his part that, you know, that's what these people are trading in. And he said, "But you know, the emotion that I most exploited was loneliness." He said, that's the audience that I was catering to, was all these people that went to the grindhouses were very, very lonely. You know, they were looking for something that they didn't have. And I thought that was kind of poignant on Dave's part.
Well, Eddie Muller, thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry. It was a pleasure.
Eddie Muller's new book is called Grindhouse, The Forbidden World of Adults-Only Cinema. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.